I'm talking to Leo O'Donnell, the once managing director of Jacobs. Leo, can you tell me, where did it all start? Where did you grow up?
Where did I grow up? I was actually born in Derry. My parents lived just across the border from Donegal. We stayed there for 10 years. I moved down to Sligo to school. Came to Dublin in 1955 as an apprentice to Keenan Company, a firm of chartered accountants. They're now part of PricewaterhouseCoopers. Spent some years there. I worked in London in Pricewaterhouse, also accountants. Came back and worked in Dublin in Craig Gardner's, now Pricewaterhouse. I left there in 1963 and I went to Cork to work for Hankins and Goodless Wall. The people used to make Valspar and Uno paints. It's now Dulux paints, I think it's called. It's owned by ICI. I went to Cork in 1963. Shortly after, I met a Cork girl, married her. And 8 years later, when I came back to Dublin, we had three daughters and a son. But I came back to Dublin in April 1971 to join W&R Jacob, or Irish Biscuits, as it was sometimes known. And that really was my first... I came to Jacobs because... in fact, it was in response to an ad in the paper. Read an ad in the paper one day. They were looking for a financial accountant. My wife and I, we wanted to come and live in Dublin. And I thought this might be interesting. I applied for the job. I came up one Saturday. I remember driving up to Dublin. And I met a man named Alan King, who was the finance director. He explained to me that the company had some problems. Now, at that time, Jacobs, of course, was extraordinarily well known, highly respected, would have been regarded as a fairly old-fashioned, even in 1971, old-fashioned company. And, dare I say, probably a Protestant company, as Guinness would have been, or Goulding's, or whatever. So it wasn't necessarily the kind of business I would want to join, in the sense of it wasn't a modern technology, it wasn't maybe a thing of the future. But however, a few days afterwards, Alan King rang me and said his boss, the managing director at the time, Gordon Lambert, would like to meet me. So another Saturday, I drove back to Dublin, I met Gordon, and just one of those funny things, he and I just hit it off. We got on first time we met. And he explained to me that the company was having very, very considerable financial difficulties. I'll come back to that in a moment and explain why. And we agreed that I would join the company, which I did. I joined Jacobs as his financial controller in April 1971. And six, seven, 8 months later, I was appointed to the board of W&R Jacob, the holding company. And I was to stay with Jacobs for the following, well, one way and another, and for most of the following 30 years. Yeah. At first I was the finance director. Then it was a time of great change, great change, great disruption.
In what way now?
Well, I suppose it takes us back to the start of the story in a way. Jacobs had been in Bishop Street since 1851, I think, to be precise. And others, Jonathan, I think, will tell you the story better of how the factory was developed in from a relatively small location into a huge physical place. I think it was on six, seven acres on the floor, but certainly six, seven stories at least in places. But the building was unsuitable for a modern manufacturing plant. It didn't allow for expansion. It certainly didn't allow for the installation of modern equipment and so on. And some years earlier, the board of the company, sometime in the mid-late 60s, Jacobs acquired Boland's Biscuits, who were based down here in Dean's Grange. And the company knew, and had known for several years, it had to leave Bishop Street. It couldn't remain in this old, increasingly obsolete building. And the hope was that they could expand and develop the biscuit factory in Dean's Grange. And it's interesting now, at this remove, to think that, as I understand, one of the biggest issues they faced was, would they be able to recruit enough people in Dean's Grange to staff a biscuit factory?
Really?
Because at that stage, remember, Jacobs were employing, well, when I came first, about 3,500 people, I think. Maybe more than half of them were women. So, and of course, most of the employees lived in the Liberties, or that general area. Liberties is a rather loose term, but towards the South City area there. And mobility wasn't necessarily, you know, easy. That was to arise later, indeed. But that was the preferred location.
Were you there for that takeover of Boland's?
No, I was not there. That was 1966 that happened. In fact, I think Sean Lamass played a great part in that, in bringing together the Boland people. A man named Humphrey O'Donoghue, who was a neighbour of mine up here, was the managing director, chairman of Boland's, I think.
Yeah.
He was a very strong, energetic personality. But he and the Jacobs would have been very far removed from each other.
I see.
And I think Sean Lamass probably played a role, because he would have known Humphrey well, he would have known Gordon Lambert very well, or they would both have known Sean Lamass well. And remember, it was in the 60s, it was all about mergers and creating stronger Irish companies with a view to exporting and getting away from the home market and so on. So this idea of two leading food firms coming together, that was very much suited government policy at the time.
And I would imagine very exciting times.
Oh, it must have been, yes.
Did you see the result of that? Because you came in a few years then, later. Did you see, was that a good choice or was a good decision?
Yeah, but it's very interesting. I've learned a lot from this since. But when I joined Jacobs first, in 5 years later, I had no difficulty in distinguishing the people who were originally from Boland's and originally from Jacobs. They were still very different.
In what way?
They were different in that their approach was different. Their background, of course, was different. The Boland people, well, firstly, the Jacob people were the victors, if you like. They were the bigger firm. When the merger took place of Jacobs and Boland's, this new company called Irish Biscuits was formed. And 90% of Irish Biscuits was owned by the shareholders in Jacobs, and only 10% by the original shareholders in Boland's. So it gave you some impression of, I mean, it wasn't a merger, it was a takeover.
Yeah.
Of a much bigger firm, by a much bigger firm, of a much smaller firm.
And so there wasn't that much control then by the original Boland's.
No, they eventually lost their identity.
Yeah.
Totally. But I just saw the this element of it, because this issue of people plays quite a part in the story that's to follow.
Okay.
And because, you see, biscuit making was a very labour-intensive business. All the biscuit companies employed large, in Britain, Huntley and Palmer, Jacobs, of course, in Liverpool, they were all companies employing 5,000 to 10,000 people. Huge numbers. And each of these organisations had their own culture. And very interestingly, of course, most of the big UK biscuit companies were all, again, Quaker families. The Palmers, the Carrs, the Jacobs themselves, and so on.